welcome back to yet again another episode of the Frontier Report. This marks episode number 7 in our incredible journey of this podcast. It is currently about 3:30 p.m. PST, August 11th. Can't complain. Beautiful day. 63-degree room that we find ourselves in today. Arlen, it's not bad in here, is it?
It's chilly, but it's a nice change.
So if you've never heard either of us before, that's Arlen. I'm Kyle. We do this thing called Frontier Mining, where we basically host and mine and do all sorts of stuff with cryptocurrency-based machines. But more so than that, what we want to do is create accessibility into this world of blockchain and cryptocurrency, and we do that through a whole bunch of different channels. But we love our podcast. This is our weekly episode of the Frontier Report, and this episode is going to be an interesting one for you. We're going to hear all about what's been going on over the course of July. $1.5 billion in ICOs raised, even more so than that. Of course, no surprise here, continuous involvement from various governments, continuous involvement of institutional capital, and continuous involvement of major corporations. Even with Bitcoin at 6.3K, the market looks pretty good. So on that note, let's get this thing started. Moving on to hot takes of the week, let me start by just saying this, Arlen. I know I mentioned in our intro here that Bitcoin's price is at 6.3K, but let me tell you, stop staring at Bitcoin's price. I'm sorry, it had to be said. While the world's biggest cryptocurrency continues its multi-year volatility, the crypto markets are actually heating up with institutional capital. In fact, this last week alone was a big week for institutional capital in crypto. We saw Goldman Sachs finally say, yes, we are planning a crypto custody service. If you know nothing about custody products, their whole purpose is to allow big funds to invest. There's a lot of security regulations around how much money can be moved from one asset management team, firm, or individual into any sort of market, crypto markets included. And so it's actually quite interesting now. Just like what we've seen in the traditional investment realm, custody services have become their own world, their own market. And in fact, they're key to crypto's long-term growth if we want to see huge amounts of cash get flowed into the world of blockchain. Not only is Goldman Sachs getting involved, but Coinbase and BitGo, both of their own institutional versions of their products, so that you can allow, again, big time names to put big time dollars into the world of crypto. But what's interesting is that now we're hearing all of these Wall Street behemoths start to have conversations. Goldman Sachs is the first, I'm sure, many to follow. Of course, as the custody market sort of sorts itself out at this point, ICOs haven't slowed down a bit. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, we saw the huge, massive number of $1.5 billion going into the market through ICOs in July. If you think ICOs are dead, they're really not. They're just more regulated. And in fact, they're raising more money than they ever had before. Of course, this month was just, or excuse me, July was just slightly up from June, where we saw about $1.4 billion go into the market. And I think this is a good chance for us to dive into our highlights of the week. Mm-hmm. The various July ICOs that really started to blow minds. And the first one's a really interesting one to me, Arlen, and I think it's a really interesting one to a lot of people, because this specific case that I'll get to in a second took over 50% of the $1.5 billion raised, and it was raised through a former Macau gangster who is known in the streets as Broken Tooth. He signed a poker deal with a secretive Chinese firm after raising $750 million in his ICO. How did he do it? Well, let me tell you. Here's the crazy part before I even tell you how, though. He did it in less than 5 minutes. So the whole story on this, there's this guy named Juan Cook Coy. And forgive me, Juan, if I'm pronouncing your name wrong. I'm doing my best over here, I promise, man. So he partnered with a really mysterious, as I mentioned, secretive Beijing firm in China to back chess and poker tournaments through his HB cryptocurrency. The way he actually raised the $750 million and the way that he claims he did it in less than, so to speak, 5 minutes, was that he actually launched star-studded events throughout Cambodia. He had three of them in total. High-ranking government and military officials were in attendance, businessmen and beyond, celebrities all the way from mainland China, Hong Kong, and etc. Juan's company is a company by the name of World Hung Mun Investment. Hung Mun, really well hung. And they claim that they sold 450 million HB tokens at these events. There's a total of 1 billion tokens. And again, these are going to be used basically to replace traditional fiat currencies in poker in various casinos, etc. We all find it to be a little strange, but the crypto market is strange, right? So this shouldn't be that big of a surprise that we're seeing, I don't know, $750 million go through in one deal. The good news, though, is that for all of you out there who are like, oh man, cryptocurrency, this is just a black market where you can have these random gangsters like Broken Tooth raise $750 million. Don't worry. There are a lot of regulated forms of capital also coming into the market. One of the most interesting ones to me personally is through a company called Scalar Capital. So Scalar Capital is not, I would say, the most sexy firms out there, but it is a cryptocurrency investment firm that raised more than $12 million. The particularly interesting part about this story is that the $12 million came through high-profile investors, including Mark Andreessen himself from Andreessen Horowitz and Chris Dixon, who is a general partner at Andreessen Horowitz. The whole story on how Scalar was able to raise this $12 million and bringing their total, by the way, their total raise up to $20 million, is they pulled $8 million in January through a private sale to institutional investors only. They brought on these two big heavy hitters who invested privately, not through Andreessen Horowitz, into Scalar Capital. But you know what I love about this story more than anything is that this company, Scalar Capital, was founded by a couple of kids, you know? And I think what we're seeing in the crypto market now, and really in just the entire space of startup and innovative technology, is that you don't need to be some super well seasoned businessman or executive. In fact, you can just be someone who has a really, really clairvoyant sense of where the future is going. In this case, two UCSD graduates, University of California at San Diego, who actually worked at Coinbase and compliance, they called Coinbase their training ground for understanding cryptocurrencies, and they decided to build this fund. And this fund basically manages 20 of the different top 50 cryptocurrencies. They basically pulled 20 of their favorites, and they said, look, we're going to actually hold these crypto assets for 3 to 5 years. It's certainly a play for institutional investors. If they're looking for, you know, a mixed asset fund to put their capital into, Scalar is a good place to do it. You know, there is an interesting portion of this story, though, Arlen, and I would love to hear where your head's at on this. So they're claiming that they're actually not going to short Ether, but we've been hearing a lot about Ether recently. What's your standpoint on it? Do you think this platform is scalable enough to warrant investments now?
Yeah, I mean, to give a little background, Ethereum is a, you know, smart contract based cryptocurrency that relies heavily on user written programs to essentially facilitate transactions and transfer data on a network. And the issue that people are running into right now is that even with its, you know, it's popular, it's one of the biggest cryptocurrencies, but on the grand scale of things, there's not that many applications that are using it today.
I think there's just 5,000 total.
And how many of those are actually being used, like on a daily basis?
Maybe CryptoKitties.
Yeah, CryptoKitties, and there's a few others. But even with that load, it is over exceeding its max capacity.
Right.
And it's stretching the limits of what the network's capable of. Transaction fees are through the roof. Transaction times are even higher.
Yeah, I believe what we're looking at, I think it's 15 transactions per second on the Ethereum network, whereas you look at something like Visa, a major credit card, that does 4,200 transactions per second.
And that's true. You know, and it's a double-edged sword. I mean, Ethereum's not a payment processing platform, but it is a transactional platform.
And people are frankly using it as a store of value as
Exactly. I mean, that's what we saw. I mean, that being said, you know, I think Ethereum's dropped about $100 in the last week, you know, going from 488. And right now, as we record this, is at 325. You know, that's a big drop. I think there's definitely been a lot of confidence, you know, broken in that space over the last week. And I'm not really sure what caused it. I mean, I think it's maybe just the, you know, it's been kind of in the air and people have
I think people are starting to realize that Ether's capabilities are not, you know, they're not justifying the price that's associated with it. Even more so than that, though, you know, the big problem with Ethereum right now is that the reason we saw its price, you know, shoot up close to 1,000 last year was because when most ICOs, or I shouldn't say most, when many ICOs were raising, they were using Ethereum as sort of their base currency that they would accept investments in. And so naturally that pumped up the market because Ether was getting traded really regularly. Then, of course, within its own world, the Ethereum blockchain, Ether is used as the base currency as well. So you get a lot of falsified numbers when you're looking at Ethereum, but the reality is we talk to a lot of big investors who are deciding to short the market with Ethereum, predominantly because of the fact that it isn't scalable at this point, and we do see that it's going to drop until Vitalik, who's the founder of Ethereum, can find a way to scale this platform out so that, number one, its transactional time can increase, as Arlen mentioned, number two, so that it can handle more decentralized applications that are built on top of it, referred to as dApps for all of our newbies out there.
So I mean, that's the decision right now.
Right.
If you believe in Ethereum, you believe in their founder and their team, You know, they have a lot of funding at this point, you know, being one of the biggest cryptocurrencies on the market still to this day, even despite this downtrend.
Even though they have no central owner, which I always find interesting with blockchain.
Yeah, that's like the catch-22. Who makes that decision to turn the ship? Is it just cruising down the way it's going to go and there's not going to be a change? I mean, it's really, right now, you know, purchasing Ethereum would be, it's a gamble. It's a bet. You know, which side of the fence are you gonna fall on? It sounds like a lot of people are shorting it, so they don't have much faith, but you never know.
Well, and the other thing, too, is like, look, if you want to invest in Ethereum, be my guest. Go and invest. But if you're going to invest now, hang on to that coin for many, many years. In the same way that Scalar Capital says, look, we're going to do 3 to 5 year investments, you should be thinking the same way. So Ethereum's in its own realm at this point. It's not a great store value. It's not a great transactional tool. Is it an effective tool to build dApps on? Many would argue that. Moving down the list, though, with July ICOs, let's fly through a few of the interesting ones here. You've heard about this most recent one I'm going to bring up on our last podcast, a company by the name of Handshake. Basically, what Handshake does is they're replacing the digital entities today that authenticate web payments. So a lot of what you never see when you're making a transaction on a Shopify-based site, for example, are powered by these web authentication platforms or these payment authentication platforms. Handshake wants to basically disrupt the central authority that is now authenticating web payments and replace it with its own blockchain-based platform. So what's sort of interesting about this is that they've now raised another $10.2 million from top VCs and bringing their total valuation to $136 million, I believe is the number. It'll be launching in 3 months. If you want to learn more about it, I suggest you go check out our previous episode, episode number 6 of the Frontier Report. But moving down our list here with the top ICOs of the month of July, this one I like a lot. And I'll be honest with you, I don't find this one to be particularly interesting in terms of its use case, but the investors that came behind it are particularly interesting. So this company goes by the name of Open Finance Network, OFN, as it's referred to in the world of blockchain and crypto, and it's actually the first U.S. regulated security token trading platform of sorts. So in other words, it's a platform where it's basically another exchange. It's not a ton different than what we saw with Coinbase, but it is a U.S. regulated exchange, or at least trading platform. It's being brought to market now, and is being brought to market predominantly because of an investment capital management firm called Morgan Creek. Morgan Creek currently controls more than $1 billion in assets and is an industry leader in digital asset investments, according to their website. But one of their investors was particularly interested in the OFN project. His name goes by Anthony Pompliano. I think that's about right.
I think you got it.
Yeah. We always struggle in these pronunciations. Yes. In Pompliano's words, he says, Morgan Creek Digital is excited to partner with OFN as they build out important infrastructure to empower transactions of digital securities. The team at OFN has been working on regulated exchange solutions for many years and has a distinct first mover advantage, obviously being the first U.S. regulated cryptocurrency exchange. So bottom line, Morgan Creek is excited. Future transactions of regulated securities won't be based on legacy infrastructure anymore, but now are going to be entirely digitally native. So let's shift gears for a second here. We're going to keep talking about ICOs, but I want to move out of the world of exchanges and blockchain-based products and start talking about what we always find pretty interesting, which is the infrastructure behind blockchain, commonly referred to as mining. So interesting thing here, on our previous episode, we talked a lot about Bitmain. Now, Bitmain is the largest producer of ASIC-based mining chips, and they are now being valued at close to $18 billion. Believe it or not, when we talked on this last episode just about a week ago, they were only valued at $14 billion. And in the last week alone, Bitmain has been doing crazy things. Actually, they'll be opening up a facility in Texas, moving to the U.S. because China booted them out, putting $500 million, $500 million into their Texas-based facility. In this case, though, the mining market is still moving with UK-based Argo Mining. So this is actually the first crypto/blockchain company to be listed on the LSE, aka the London Stock Exchange. And they were able to raise $32.5 million in an IPO, not an ICO, but an IPO. So a little bit more of a traditional route. If you want to check them out online, their ticker is ARB. But what they do, something we're really familiar with, which is called cloud mining. Arlen, tell the people, they've heard about it before from you, but tell them again, cloud mining, what is it? Why is it important? Why are we not too sure about it?
Cloud mining is an interesting beast. It is a way of purchasing hashing power on a network without owning any equipment. So it's almost like you went and rented server space for your website. It's like that, but you are buying hashing power that's making, hopefully, a return on investment. And that's where it gets a little dicey because unlike regular mining where you own the equipment and you can upgrade it and you can evolve it and you can sell it. In a cloud mining contract, you're essentially betting against the company that's selling you that contract that it's going to do better than what you paid for it, and the longer you're shorted in the market. And at the end of the contract, if you didn't make, you know, you weren't profitable, you don't have any hardware or other things to sell off.
Right.
You're pretty much left with the asset that you generated. And the reason why we are kind of on the fence about it is because of that. You know, if you don't have the flexibility or the access to your equipment, it really limits your choices. You know, you don't have the choice to optimize the cards if, you know, a new BIOS comes out, or you know, you can't tweak it or overclock it. I mean, you buy that hashing power, that's the number you're going to get, and no matter what you do, that's not going to change. And the problem is, with, as we know, with network difficulty and as more competition enters the space, in the mining space, hardware becomes less efficient unless you are constantly optimizing, unless you're constantly updating. And in a cloud contract, you might not have that opportunity.
Arlen's 100% right there. Of course, the advantage of a cloud-based contract is it's really cheap now to mine, especially with services like Argo Mining, who received 50,000 people on their wait list within just about 48 hours of announcing their IPO. So people are interested in cloud mining. I don't think people are recognizing what the potential downsides of it is, but either way, Argo kicked off on the exchange on the LSE with about 156 million shares, accounting for 53.2% of its issued shared capital, again raising about $32.5 million. We're, of course, interested in seeing what they do. We've got our questions. I'm sure some of our listeners do as well, but we'll keep an eye on them nonetheless. And if you want a cloud mine, hey, go take a look at Argo, although there are a ton of competitors out there too.
Yes,
last note for our July ICOs, Hedera Hashgraph. Now, we talked about Hedera Hashgraph, I believe, two or three episodes prior to this one on the Frontier Report, and they have now raised $100 million, and they're not stopping either. So kind of an interesting twist, though, is that they raised this $100 million via a future token sale. And if you're familiar with the world of startups, kind of like raising a debt round or a convertible debt round, if you're familiar with that language. Really simply, you basically buy tokens that are going to be issued at a future date. So when the Hedera network actually is up and running, and we'll talk about Hedera in just a second, in really simple terms, that's when your tokens are converted to their current value. You can buy them now for significantly cheaper than what they may be worth, or you are making a huge mistake and you're buying them far too early and they're evaluating the company incorrectly. You can go either way. Just like any other cryptocurrency, it's a high risk investment. Basically, what Hedera is doing is they're trying to solve a lot of the problems that we're seeing that exist on the Ethereum blockchain, for example. So basically what Hedera is, it's a new distributed public ledger that the company says can function much faster, more securely, and at a larger scale than current blockchain technologies. This is their claim. The way they do this is, instead of using a proof of work algorithm that requires actual miners, like we always talk about, and actual physical infrastructure to create an actual floor, they instead use a new form of transactional sort of authentication, which they are referring to as a virtual voting consensus algorithm. In simplest terms, it's kind of like proof of stake. You've heard us talk about that before, where essentially the biggest players in the network carry the biggest weight. They vote on transactions. That's how transactions get passed. This is the consensus algorithm has been tested a few times, but it hasn't been tested at scale. We'll keep an eye on what Hedera is up to, but the bottom line here is, with all of these July ICOs with $1.5 billion in capital being raised, it's really simple. Blockchain has become a focal point for institutional capital, and if that is a sign of anything, it's that you should stop staring at Bitcoin's price. Let's get on to stories of the week.
Moving on to stories of the week.
Brilliant stuff for our Frontier Report listeners who have never heard this. This is actually a pretty special moment, so we are going to pause.
Oh my gosh.
Arlen has never transitioned into stories of the week.
It is my first transition.
I have to say, that sounded really good.
I learned from the
Moving
best.
Moving on. I'm impressed. Arlen, tell us all about the stories of the week.
I will. So, Indian state government launches the country's first blockchain district.
Really?
Yes, they did. This is in the government of Telangana, and help me, correct me if I'm wrong.
Telangana? Something like that.
A southern Indian state, and it's partnering with major IT firms to establish a district exclusive to blockchain startups in the state capital city. This is really interesting. This is not the first time we've seen a city jump into the whole blockchain district idea.
We talk about this all the time, I mean,
I feel like.
This Crypto like, Rico, Malta, Liechtenstein.
This is the fourth one, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's many more, believe me, that we haven't talked about.
So anyway, They've inked a MOU, or Memorandum of Understanding, with multinational IT services, this being the State Information Technology, Electronics and Communication Government of Teleganda.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, geez, it is. There's a lot of words there. And the blockchain district will function as an incubator for domestic blockchain startups and companies to develop real-world applications of decentralized technology. And this is an interesting one because they're really focusing on applying it. Mm-hmm. I think there's been a lot of like, give us, you know, store your assets with us. You know, Malta wants to be a haven. Crypto Rica wants to be a haven.
Right.
This is, I think, one of the newer instances where they're like, okay, we also want to incubate these ideas.
Absolutely. And it's been necessary. You know, one of the interesting things about India that I hear about quite often is, number one, they're really looking at cryptocurrency as a store of value. And number two, they're looking at it as an amazing way to sort of circumvent their government.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is that India and technology have gone hand in hand for the last couple of years. I mean, the amount of outsourced tech work that Americans put in Indian hands would make you think that their economy is booming, but it's really not. And so just like what we saw with Malta and Liechtenstein, you got to jump on the train early if you want to ride it.
Yep. And, you know, the most notable thing about this whole thing is that the city and the government is really embracing blockchain. And like you just kind of touched on is the fact that most governments are seeing it as a threat. They're embracing it, and they have pledged to provide both regulatory and policy support for companies and startups in the sector to promote the integration of blockchain technology domestically and beyond. And I think this is – it's not necessarily the first instance, but it's definitely really cool to see them coming out and saying, this is here to stay. We're going to work with you. We're going to understand it. And, you know, and that's refreshing compared to other states that have pumped the brakes. They're saying, we're going to help you. And, you know, that's really what we need right now. We need a lot more support from governments and basically proof of concepts. You know, coinciding with the launch of the, district, they're also launching a new protocol. It's a major blockchain project, and it's going to be based out of that district. It's dubbed the 1101 protocol, spelled 11 and then 01, if you want to look that up. And it aims to deliver government-compliant platforms for startups to build decentralized applications capable of performing over 10,000 transactions a second.
Which, if you know, that would be absurd. That would revolutionize the crypto space. Again, Visa, 7,200 a second, 10,000 would actually disrupt the financial sector.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and you know, this is just an exciting case of a government taking the reins and running with it. But it's not the only one. And I don't know. We have other exciting stories in the Ethereum side of the world.
I think we just
talked about that.
That's a nice transition.
I'm trying to transition.
You're doing a great job.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, just do me a solid if you're back home right now. Send Arlen some virtual applause because I love it.
Yeah, like, comment, subscribe.
Like, comment, subscribe. Absolutely. You can find Arlen all over the internet.
Yeah.
Actually, there's some great photographs of him on Google if you type in Arlen Whitfield. So
Please keep
your eye out for that. But like Arlen said, you're absolutely right. So we're seeing transactional speeds in India, or at least transactional amounts now being claimed to be at 10,000 transactions a second. Really interesting. Ethereum has struggled with that. But trust me, the Ethereum roll does not stop. In fact, what we just heard in the last week is that Coinbase is now considering Ethereum Classic and will most likely be adding it to its trading platform over the course of the next couple of weeks. Robinhood actually beat them to it. So if you know about Robinhood is not actually an exchange. Arlen, you want to tell the people how Robinhood works and how it differs from Coinbase?
It's almost like a virtual exchange.
Yeah.
Like you're basically storing value one way or the other and trading. You never actually pull the asset out.
Right.
You're basically just trading the gains. And I'm sure there's a better financial instrument tool for what that is, but it's essentially a simulation where you can actually get paid out in real money.
Yeah, you're converting it to fiat, but you're never actually owning any of the currencies themselves. They're, like Arlen said, they're being virtually owned. It's a very confusing methodology for Robinhood to enter into the market, but it worked for them because they became one of the first traditional financial stock investing platforms to say, hey, we're going to support cryptocurrencies. We're just going to kind of circumvent.
It's a half step.
It's totally a half step. Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Good
we're going to circumvent the traditional, you know, kind of crypto exchanges that we see. So Robinhood, again, is able to move a little bit quicker because of this, and that's why they're able to beat Coinbase and bring Ethereum Classic to its app. They announced this just on Monday, about a week ago, and the real goal here was that they want to add more support to their network. You know, they want to allow ETC books to be open to the public. And then they'll get to a point where now they're claiming that once you can actually liquidate ETC on their platform, they will enable the trading of the coin. What this ended up leading to was we saw a 25% jump in ETC over the course of 30 minutes. Now I think it sits right. I think it was up at 16. It dropped down to about 14 or so. I can't remember the numbers specifically off the top of my head. Arlen, you have that for us?
I don't have that.
You don't have that for us. But the bottom line is we saw about a 22, 25% increase over the course of 30 minutes with this announcement. If you are interested in getting involved with crypto and you're worried that you're too late to the game, first and foremost, you're not. Next thing, if you ever see a Robinhood or a Coinbase say we're going to add a coin to our platform, go buy that coin because the bottom line is that Coinbase, and really alongside Robinhood, they have some of – they probably together have the most crypto traders in the world on their platforms because they've created this accessibility to the market. So it's food for thought. That being said, Ethereum is now starting to get a lot of traction. Even with the market getting shorted, people are still talking about it pretty regularly. And with all of Ethereum's activity, I think what we're – bottom line is what we're seeing now – is we're just seeing people get more heavily engaged with the market. You know, whether it be Coinbase all the way to Goldman Sachs, all the way down the line to Sony, people are talking about crypto. And Sony took it from a little bit of a different angle. We know we see a lot of people moving money into the market. For the first time, similar to Argo Mining, like we talked about earlier, Sony said, we're actually going to patent blockchain hardware. So to my hardware expert of a friend sitting to my stage right my left in what's normal left? Just normal left?
I think normal left is normal the technical term.
Call it NL, just so NL. It sounds better.
Yeah.
What's Sony up to?
So they're offering, they're not offering, but they're filing patents for two blockchain hardware solutions. And you know, you said that I could probably translate this. Frankly,
a little over your head.
It's vague. You know, I think much with a lot of patents, they tend to be more of conceptual than actual. I'm not sure what the application is going to be, but the idea is there. And so. Yeah, let me read through this and kind of get the information out there, and then we can see if we can
dilute anything for me.
Yeah. Sony intends to improve the design and structure of blockchain hardware by introducing new circuitries. Yeah, there you go. Circuitries. That was a weird.
That's not a tough one at all.
It's not, but it looks weird. To the processes of distributed ledger technology. Bear with me, you guys. The first application, entitled Electronic Node and Method for Maintaining a Distributed Ledger, describes an electronic device for maintaining a blockchain based on multiple electronic nodes, including multiple blocks associated with at least one of the existing blocks.
Nobody's going to get that that's listening to us.
Yeah, that's very abstract. I mean, it basically means there's a centralized node that manages a lot of subset hardware.
Right.
And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, one of the current issues we have with cryptocurrency hardware is that it's standalone. You know, you don't have a distributed node. Each antminer stands for its own. It has its own processor, its own network card, its own power supply, and that's it. The brains are tied, you know, linearly. It's not like distributed in any way. And in this way, I see a centralized processing or management node with a lot of slave boxes around it that help, you know, that power. It's almost like when you want to expand, you slap another hard drive in. Same thing. When you want to expand, you slap another miner in. The hardware centralized management server initializes it and runs with it.
Well, and I found this kind of interesting too, because my understanding of this patent is they're actually going to allow for virtual nodes as well. So you don't even need to have nodes physically connected to each other.
That's the second type.
Right.
That's the second one.
So that's the second patent.
Yeah, I can jump in that. So that's the device and system patent. Sony proposes a way of maintaining a blockchain by multiple virtual nodes, suggesting a mechanism of accessing the distributed ledger via at least one of these nodes. So I think this is very much in line with the other thing, is that you hit a centralized node or management server, and that's distributed out. I mean, this is just like a render contract at that point, where you hit a distribution server, and that is farmed out to a render farm. This will be a mining farm. It's really smart. You know, it definitely starts to answer the scalability question are running into.
And frankly, I mean, I think in some ways too, now we're going to be decreasing the barrier of entry of actually getting into mining as an investment vehicle if you can go purchase one of these external nodes.
And that's what ASICs did. You know, ASICs made a very complex thing. You know, you slap a power cable in and an Ethernet cable and you're good. It's mining. This is, I think, the next step.
Yep. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And I mean, even more so than that, just seeing Sony patent hardware means that maybe we're not moving all the way over to proof of stake. Maybe we will be living in this proof of work algorithm for some time.
Well, Intel too.
Yeah.
I mean, Intel was right there too.
I think IBM is right there with them as well. And we're seeing Sony get involved not only just in mining, because actually in 2017, they were talking about creating a blockchain to provide secure sharing of student records. So the big theme here is, yes, the big players are getting involved, but it's not all about cash. They're actually seeing the technological implications as well. But as always, it's not just Sony. Yeah. There's actually a real interesting name that popped up quite a bit in the news. And let me tell you why this name popped up before I even tell you what the name is. So we talked about briefly on our last episode that the New York Stock Exchange, everybody knows the NYSE, its owner, the Intercontinental Exchange, otherwise known as ICE, said, we are actually going to create our very own Bitcoin product. And we're going to call it, and this name I find really interesting, but it's called BAKT. So in other words,
how do you spell it?
It's B-A-K-K-T.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
whatever BAKT, that means.
Yeah. They were going for BAKT as in like the crypto is actually backed by something real. But what BAKT does is it introduces Bitcoin products to the market that can be accessible by institutional investors predominantly. Their first was a Bitcoin futures product. But the reason that Starbucks came up over the course in the world of blockchain quite a bit last week is because they said that it would be trading Bitcoin alongside Microsoft and ICE in a partnership with no other than BAKT. The theme here is that, yes, Starbucks' name started popping up because they decided, Starbucks' sort of investment team decided that they were going to start moving Bitcoin around. But no, customers, you cannot pay for your Frappuccinos with Bitcoin. I am sorry for all of our friends out there that were really excited about this, even though I can't imagine there were that many. The bottom line is that Starbucks wants to clarify they're not going to be accepting digital assets at their locations. And in a later statement, they also mentioned that one thing that they can do is that, and at least for the time being, if you walk into Starbucks and you want to pay with Bitcoin, they will actually help you exchange it to fiat to pay for Starbucks. So I don't know how this actually plays out. My understanding is it's at only a few locations where this is actually a reality, but Starbucks is at least dipping its toes in to the world of Bitcoin for Frappuccinos, and we will see if that ever means anything.
I think it will.
Do you think it will?
Well, I mean, you see people going there all the time with their mobile phones and scan the QR codes. I mean, that's a virtual currency.
And actually, Starbucks was really one of the first to do that. They have their own payment system, their own virtual digital payment system.
It'd be a half step for them to switch into crypto.
Yeah.
And they, you know, I can see them partnering with a conglomerate or, you know, it makes sense that they go that, even though they have their own, they already have it. They have it all already in some ways that they have this.
The problem right now, I think, that they're seeing is that a lot of the traditional payment processors that exist in the world that, I mean, from my understanding, for all I know, frankly, Starbucks may rely on like the Stripes and the Squares, et cetera. You're still not seeing the acceptance of cryptocurrency, at least at a point of sale system. So it will take time, but you know what? I hate to tell you, Starbucks, it doesn't really matter because at some point, every store will accept some form of cryptocurrency at a POS, even if it's just a digital version of our dollar. All that being said, it's been quite a week for crypto. No surprise. This market, as many investors say, moves faster than any other market we've ever seen. The technology is growing faster than we've ever seen. And it will be a $1 trillion market at its current pace within the next 5 to 10 years. So keep your eyes out for it. We're going to keep talking about it. If you want to find us, go over to frontiermining.co. If you want to hear our podcast, our previous episodes, check out podcast.frontiermining.co/S1, standing for season one. We have 7 or 6 other episodes you can listen to now on to our 7th. But the bottom line, that wraps it up for Frontier Report episode number 7, August 11th, reporting out of Los Angeles, California. As always, Arlen, it is a true pleasure, my friend. We'll be back in the airs in just about a week. But until then, leave our listeners with something special.
Just drop some knowledge right now.
Do it.
Okay. Well, with Ethereum and its, you know, its struggles in the expansion part, I think this is the first of the many of the titans that are going to be falling.
Yep.
You know, we're in that phase where we're still trying to find the pets.com of the .com bubble. Ethereum very well might be it. And I'm not saying that it is. I'm not saying that it isn't. But I think that there's going to start to be some growing pains in the existing coins that have made a name, including Bitcoin, as new coins emerge. I mean, we just saw, you know, this whole city's being built around creating a more agile and sustainable blockchain technology that can scale. And I think that's the real theme of this, is that blockchain needs to be able to scale, because right now, if we're having trouble, we're at such a small fraction of what it really will need to be to adopt the internet type, you know, traffic. And if we really do see the blockchain as being internet 4.0, then it needs to grow. It needs to grow up. And there's going to be some growing pains in that phase, and Ethereum might be the first casualty. We don't know.
Simply put, blockchain is a prepubescent teen, and we can just not wait to see it grow up, yeah. Like you said.
It's got to go to college.
Oh, it's got a lot to do. It's still got to get a job, man.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That being said, we're signing off. We'll see you in a week.